Hello, everybody. Here it is, Wednesday. We have an interesting show for you tonight. I'm going to talk to Jim Mars here in a moment, one of the great authors of conspiracy books. And he has, of course, the consummate book out on the JFK assassination. And we'll open up the phones about that. You can't talk to Jim without talking about that. We'll also talk about his book, Rule of Secrecy, in which he talks about a secret government worldwide and the evidence that that actually exists. And then he has a UFO science fiction type book out called The Alien Agenda, which we'll also cover with Jim. So that'll be pretty interesting. Jim, you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, and I recognize that Texas accent since I have an Oklahoma one, you know.
Well, that's practically neighbors.
Yeah, that's right. So, first of all, welcome to the show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you.
And by the way, I have been hearing rumors that did you write another JFK book besides the one years back? I hear rumors you're working on something like that again, or am I hearing the wrong thing?
Well, no, yes and no. I'm not working on another book at the moment, although there is some stuff in the work to try to do an updated version of Crossfire. And I really would like to go through there and clear out some of the stuff that, that was based on all the information we had as of about the mid-80s. And, of course, we know a whole lot more today. In fact, I think one of the smoking guns has been made public.
Oh, really?
During that time, yeah. Back about 1995, the Assassinations Record Review Board released, made public, and they actually published a story in the Dallas Morning News. I don't know if it made to the rest of the country. They found a memo from Gerald Ford, our only unelected president, and a former ranking member of the Warren Commission, and he had ordered the authors of the Warren Commission report to change the wording in that report from Kennedy was shot in the back to, he ordered them to change it to Kennedy was shot through the neck. And of course this it sounds like, you know, a kind of a minor editorial thing, except it gets to the absolute crux of the case. If Kennedy was shot in the back at the level of the third thoracic vertebra between the shoulder blades, which is exactly where the autopsy showed the wound was, it's exactly where the hole is in his jacket and his shirt, which are still available in the National Archives, then we know that there was a bullet wound at his Adam's apple in the front of his throat. If you connect those two wounds, which I'm not even sure they connect, but if you do, and you go from the back to the front, that's an upward trajectory, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly sounds like it.
And that makes it totally impossible for that bullet to have turned in midair or changed course and gone back down to strike Connally, which destroys the single bullet theory, which is the foundation of the single assassin theory that the Warren Commission was working on. So rather than try to deal with that, he had them change the wording to Kennedy was shot through the neck, and that's what's allowed the Warren Commission apologist all these years to argue that a shot came through his neck and didn't hit anything, went on strike Connally. It's just the screwiest thing in the whole world, and nobody that I know of has ever said anything about Gerald Ford having medical credentials. So, you know, this, I think, clearly shows us the political nature of that crime.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and of course, one of the terrible blows, in my opinion, but you're much more of an expert than me about this, is that Connally was put to rest and laid to rest without anybody really being able to
I know. You know, I was one of those that was firing off emails and letters and everything else, trying to make some phone calls, trying to reach somebody, saying, look, it's a real simple thing. You know, please open that wrist up. Get those bullet fragments out of Connally's wrist, and then we can use spectrographic analysis to compare that with the bullet fragments in the National Archives, and we'll know right away. We know for absolute sure whether that's the same ammunition, whether, you know, we could prove all that up, and it didn't happen. And I think there's a reason for that, again, the political nature. At Governor Connally's funeral, he was, Mrs. Connally, Nellie, a very fine Southern woman, I might add, was flanked on one hand by Lady Bird Johnson and the other by Richard Nixon. So, you know, I think you can tell where probably the pressure came from not to do that very simple thing, you know.
Yeah, we're talking with Jim Morris here, and we're going to talk about his recent books here in a moment. But, Jim, I know you don't mind, or at least I hope you don't mind, us talking about the JFK thing right off the bat, because you're really synonymous with one of the better books.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I think actually I don't think that's that inappropriate. I think what's going on today in many ways parallels the Kennedy assassination. Both were great national traumas. Both of them had suspects and evidence, you know, gathered up to point to the evildoer even before the sun had set on the day of the event, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of the Kennedy assassination, it's taken us about 40 years to figure out that a lot of that evidence is bogus. And I'm just, you know, the thing I'm so fired up on right now is trying to get people to stop and think about what's going on. Let's don't rush pell-mell into this war on terrorism until we know for dead certain what's really going on.
And we're going to get into that as we continue our conversation here. I know you've got some interesting theories, and I like the way you lay out some of this stuff. Jim, since that book in 85, that's 16 years ago, what about your ideas and your thoughts and your convictions about the Kennedy assassination? Have they changed much?
No, you know what, actually, Jerry, is really interesting. I was asked by the head of continuing education at that department at the University of Texas at Arlington, which is located between Dallas and Fort Worth. Back in 1976, I was asked by the head of that department if I'd considered teaching a course on the Kennedy assassination, and I had never really considered that. I was a newspaper reporter, you know, but the more I thought about it, the more intrigued I became, because, you know, the big problem in news, whether it's broadcast or print, is that you never really have the space or the time to tell the full story, you know? And so I thought, well, here's an opportunity to have people come to a classroom situation, and I could really lay out all of the evidence. And so I did. I've been teaching that ever since. In fact, I have a course going on right now, still at the university, about the Kennedy assassination. And what's really interesting is that I haven't changed my tune one iota. What I taught them and what I gave to them and what I said was my conclusions back in 1976 is the exact same thing today, hadn't changed a bit. In fact, if anything, there's more evidence to support my position now than there was then. But what's changed is the attitude of the people who take the course. Back then, the first question I always asked was, how many believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone as the assassin of President Kennedy? And it was unanimous. Everybody would raise their hand. Starting about 1980, I guess right after the findings of the House Select Committee on Assassinations, that all began to shift. And over about a 3-4 year period there, it went from unanimous to not unanimous, but minority to about equal to majority. And ever since about 1986, I haven't had one single person come take that course who clearly felt like that Oswald was the lone assassin. So, you know, that's quite a turnaround in the public perception of that event.
Yeah, that is interesting. Now, that's at the University of Texas at Arlington, right?
Right.
What kind of credit do you get for that course?
Oh, it gets something called equivalent credits or something. It's in continuing education. It's like adult education.
Sure.
We meet at night, you know, for several weeks.
Well, maybe people could contact that school and find out when your next course is going to be.
Right. It's probably not going to be until, again, next fall. In the spring, I teach a different course. But
Jim, you left yourself wide open. What do you teach in the spring?
Well, you're going to love this one. I teach a course on UFOs.
Well, great. That's one of our subjects tonight.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of people are really interested in that. They want to know, what is that? Is there anything to all that? Do they really exist? If they do, what are they, you know? So now, when I say I teach a course, that's not really quite true. Teaching a course implies that I have all this knowledge and I impart it to all these people. I tell them right from the front coming into the UFO course that this is a mutual learning experience, you know, that we don't know all there is to know about that, but that here's some starting points, and we go back and look at the evidence for UFOs in the history, and then we move forward and look at some of the more classic cases, like Roswell, to find out if we can determine what's going on there. Then we go and look at some of the latest stuff that's going on. And, of course, being in a classroom situation again, you're not like most people, which are subjected to simply some kind of official pronouncement. You know, you get a news flash or you get a news little news story, you know, something appeared over New Jersey, you know, blah, 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 and then it disappears and you never hear any more about it. We dig in and try to figure out what exactly was all that. Could it have been a weather balloon? Could it have been Venus? Could it have been military secret testing? You know, and we generally try to figure out what's really going on. So it's really quite an interesting course. And what's really interesting is about, oh, I don't know, 45 years ago, I suggested this course and was told that one of the regents of the university had given thumbs down because he said he didn't, didn't want me teaching anything like that. And the only explanation I got was because he said nobody would sign up for such a course.
It's probably the most popular one.
I know. That's what's so amazing. And, of course, I told him at the time, I said, well, you know, if you don't offer it, damn sure nobody's going to sign up for it.
Yeah, right.
You know? And sure enough, when this guy retired or the opposition went away, and they said, well, yeah, why don't you go ahead and teach that UFO course, immediately I had like 25 people in the class. So, you know, you can't tell me that people are not interested. They are.
We wanted to go ahead and open up the phones right now, but I think we'll hold it off to 7 o'clock because I really want to talk about Jim's latest article, War on Terrorism. And it's open. You can find that over on his website, by the way, jimmars.com. Jim, that's J-I-M-M-A-R-R-S, right?
Right.
Okay. The players with the with W's administration is the same ones that were with Bush.
Right. In fact, I don't know if you're aware of the controversy that's going on right now, but Bush just issued some executive orders saying that a sitting president can block the release of papers from past administrations.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is incredible. In fact,
isn't it? And yet, well, no wonder, because look, Donald Rumsfeld and Cheney, all these people, they've all been up there. You know, they're the ones who've gotten us into where we are right now, you know. But the thing that really struck me was, when I stop and look at it, George W.'s cabinet, you know, his administration, his cabinet, you've got Colin Powell, hero of the Gulf War. You got Donald Rumsfeld, who was former Secretary of Defense. You got Cheney, who's tied all into the defense, etc. I mean, the guy put together a war cabinet, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And I
this was long before September.
Yeah, and in fact, I've had many callers, and I've discussed it as well on my columns on the website at jerrypippin.com that maybe this might be one of the reasons everything went to hell in a handbasket so fast. You got the same old players you have with the Bush administration.
Well, see, that's the thing that I point out in Rule by Secrecy. The secretive Council on Foreign Relations and some of their members that are also members of others, what I call the secret society, trilateral commission, the Bilderbergers, these people, they permeate the government, and they permeate both political parties. In fact, I go so far as to say that if Al Gore had won the election, we'd still be right where we are today. I don't think anything would be a whole lot different except one thing. I think that the American people were much more inclined to rush along with George W., the perceived conservative Republican, whereas they might have questioned Gore, the perceived liberal Democrat.
I noticed that you put perceived between both of them.
Right, because neither one, those appellations are not correct anyway. For one thing, the Gore family has been on the payroll of Occidental Petroleum for years and years, so you could vote for oil man Bush or you could vote for oil man Gore. The oil man didn't care.
Yeah.
People are going to be running the show.
In fact, a lot of people point out that maybe almost all of this is about oil.
Absolutely. I'm convinced of it. Last week, Attorney General Ashcroft announced that the masterminds of the September 11th attacks were operating from terrorist cells in Hamburg, Germany. So Why are we bombing Afghanistan? Why aren't we bombing Germany? I mean, we've had practice at that, right?
Yeah, I noticed there was a poll out taken in Germany that was released today, and the support for this war against terrorism is not all that strong there.
No, it's not, and that's because in other parts of the world, they actually have a better understanding of world events than we do.
Well, you know, I do think, Jim, there's a little slippage in that idea these days.
And more people are beginning to wake up to the fact that, you know, our whole mass media is basically has devolved down to three corporations now.
Well, oh, really? What are they?
Oh, Viacom, AOL, Time Warner, and Disney. They're the ones who control the mass media in this country. And so all you have to do is control those three companies, and then you can control our thinking. Now, let me explain. I don't mean that they can tell us how to think. Nope, nobody can tell you how to think. But they certainly set the agenda on what we're supposed to think about, don't they? I think back through the 90s, while everything that's leading up to this war on terrorism was happening, they were still after bin Laden. They said he blew up the Khobar Towers on the U.S. airbase over in Saudi Arabia. They said he was behind the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center. We were, going back even a little bit further, we were funding, in the 80s, we were funding the Taliban and creating them so that they would fight the Russians there in Afghanistan. And while all that was going on, was anybody paying any attention to all of that? No. Because in the last few years, all we were told to pay attention to was O.J. Simpson, Elian Gonzalez, and Monica Lewinsky.
And in fact, the press has become such a tabloid affair, and a lot of people, and I think maybe you're one of those, that thinks that's by design. To get us off of some serious issues. There's not any foreign coverage, really.
No.
The world is smaller than it's ever been, and there's less coverage in American newspapers and on the air. There's almost nothing.
That's true. People back at the time of the Civil War knew more about what was going on in the world than we do today. I think I could probably substantiate that.
Well, that's a pretty good statement, but you're pretty close if you're not correct, even.
And nobody really can argue with the fact that our news media is just practically non-existent as far as hard-hitting, independent, investigative coverage. The only places that people argue with me is because, as you say, and I do stand by this, this is by design, okay? And some people, it's this, it's that. No, excuse me. This is by design. And by the way, it's all happened just since the Kennedy assassination. At the time of the Kennedy assassination, for example, the news departments of the major TV networks, CBS, NBC, ABC, these were funded through public service money, okay? They would just earmark money and funding, and they'd fund their news departments, and they said, okay, here, you're the news department.
Yeah, right. In fact, the making a profit out of news was just a foreign idea.
Oh, I know it. That was just unthinkable. Why, you can't make profit out of news. And after the Kennedy assassination and after the coup of 1963, this all began to change, and those news departments became, over a period of time, came under the control of the vice president of entertainment. And then the emphasis was quickly drawn away from news and more towards news personalities, the anchor men and anchor women, if you will, who were not trained journalists. A lot of them had theatrical backgrounds, you know, and there they are. And yet that is what is presented to us as the news.
Oh, I've always respected CBS News, but anymore they're just like the rest of them, and they spend more money on how many seconds you should have a TV shot on a certain angle than they do on actually how to get the facts on the news.
That's exactly right, and the reason for that is the drive for it's monetary control and money control. What they found out was, even the local stations found out, was that you have more listeners at any one time listening to the local news than you do to any of your programming, because the programming split up between people that want comedy or sports or whatever, you know. And so now the whole thing has to do with money, which has to do with ratings. So whoever can get the highest ratings gets the most advertising money, and therefore they're after the ratings. News be damned, you know? And that's why you'll see more coverage of the local sports event, or the lower local, or more coverage of the lady who drew the 12-foot zucchini or something, than you will over world news and news that is going to end up impacting all of them.
Yeah, in the first place, unless you approach it right, the interest factor in world news may not be there. It could be there, I think, if it was presented properly. But on top of that, it costs a lot of money.
Well, it's what comes first, the chicken or the egg.
Yeah.
Do you tell people that this is important news and it becomes important news, or do the people have to demand, we want to know about this important news, which they're not going to do if they don't know about it?
Yeah, I agree with that, but we get back to leadership, don't we?
Yep. And that's why, even in the news media, you know, back in the 60s when I got my degree in journalism, it was really instilled upon us that this was a sacred calling, you know, and that our obligation was not to the newspaper or the radio or TV station where we worked, and it was not to the owners of those stations, and it was not even to the establishment. It was to the public, to the community. We were supposed to be finding out the truth about what's going on and presenting it to the community, and I don't see any of that anymore.
Well, I haven't talked to anybody recently in journalism schools, but they certainly don't seem to be practicing that. But I mean, when I got into broadcasting and into news coverage and interviews and things like that, I approached it as almost as a religion, a gospel, to get the truth out.
Yes, exactly. And see, I think that was my problem. See, I was one of the last people inducted into Sigma Delta Chi, the journalism fraternity, which is now Sigma Delta Chi SPJ, Society of Professional Journalists, and because they wanted to get away from that fraternity image, okay? And yet, in getting away from that fraternity image, they also got away from all the trappings. Like, I went through an initiation, I had to walk from table to table, and there were some of these older, experienced news people there, and they impressed upon me to find the truth, to look behind the facile explanations of government, local, state, federal, to try to find the truth and try to present it to the public. And I think I made a big mistake there. I really thought that's what I was supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
That's what I'm still trying to do, and I'm on the outside, you know.
Yeah. Now let's talk a little bit about this article. What's your kind of a thumbnail and a nutshell? Tell us what this article is all about.
The war on terrorism.
Yes. Uh huh.
Or fiction? Yes. Because I'm
really interested in this, and I know our audience is. And Jim, I don't know what kind of flack you got, but the least little bit of criticism after 9/11, you would get or questions, not even really things that I would consider benign, would get you'd end up having 20 or 30 calls and advertisers trying to pull your. I mean, it happened to me. It happened to everybody.
I know it. Well, let me just put it this way. It's this simple. Trusting government is not patriotic. Okay? It's true. Even the founding fathers, Adams, Jefferson, Hamilton even, all of them, they all raised criticisms of their own government, of the one that they created after overthrowing the British government. And, you know, that's something we kind of lose sight of. Those guys that fought the American Revolution and created this country, we always think, well, they fought the British. Well, they were fighting the British. Well, yeah, they fought the British Army, but in reality, they were revolutionaries. They were fighting their own government. They were British subjects, right?
You're right.
And they were revolutionaries. They overthrew their own government. And that's just almost seems to have gotten lost, you know, in reporting the history. Now it's like George Washington and a few of those cats, they all just fought the British, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't it. And in fact, the history shows us that at the time of the American Revolution, only about 25% of the population in North America supported them. You know?
Now that's an interesting stat.
in itself.
Isn't that interesting?
I mean, today...
Most people said, oh, well, the king says this, and we have to support the king.
I mean, in today's world, you know, the public relations guy and the... All the statistician, and then of course you get the pollster, they all get together, and then it seems policy is made instead of the other way around.
That's right, and if you've ever done any study, and I've had some courses in poll taking, if you've ever studied the art of taking polls, you can understand real quick that you can skew a poll any way you want it to go. Okay? In other words, if I go out and interview 1,000 Americans and I say, do you think that they ought to take up guns so that people won't kill people? Most of them would go, yeah, I think that's a good idea. So you say, okay, 85% said yes, they should take up guns. But if you go out and say, do you think people should be able to retain the right to own a gun to protect themselves from other people? And then when most 85% would say,
right.
I think you could. I think that's right.
Well, you know, a lot of people over the years, Jim, have made fun of talking about the New World Order and the Bilderberger Group and on and on and on and all of those things. But I've done a lot of shows on this subject, and there seems to be something to it.
And your book really lays it out pretty well for even a guy like me to understand.
Well, that was the whole idea. I'd been researching that stuff, you know, back 30 years ago. I had the same questions that I'm sure a lot of my readers have, which is, you know, wait a minute. Do these groups even truly exist? And if they do exist, aren't they just a bunch of fat cats that sit around, smoke cigars, you know, try to think about what's going on in the world? And that's not what the evidence shows. Jerry, you've been at it for a while, too, and I'm sure you've gone through the same evolution that I have.
Yeah, we're about the same age.
Yeah, and it's like, God, is this really going on? And then over a period of time, though, and you watch things happen. You know, you watch things happen. In Vietnam, for example, at the height of Vietnam, when we're told that we had to go over there and stop the communism in Vietnam and fight the North Vietnamese because they were the surrogates of Russia and China and were receiving arms and ammunition from them, which was true, okay? That's what we were told. So, oh boy, off we go. Lost 58,000 Americans over there, okay? And yet at that very time, I find out, Lyndon Johnson was being, at the encouragement of his Council on Foreign Relations buddies, increased our aid to Russia at levels higher than during World War II when they were our allies. So we have a situation of where we're fighting the North Vietnamese on the one hand, saying that they're backed by Russia, and then we're loaning Russia U.S. tax-supported money, and they're building facilities like the Kama River Truck Factory and are shipping, producing war materials that they're shipping to North Vietnam to be used against our own people. Now, does that make any sense at all? Only to the people who profit from the military-industrial complex.
And that really seems to be the whole idea behind all of this, and it's just hard even for somebody who is open to the subject like myself to accept that the people would do such horrendous things for money. But
they do it. And then it even gets better or worse, depending on how you view it, which is that in the whole 20th century, was spent in wars and conflicts and cold wars and hot wars and everything else with capitalism versus communism. And what I detail in my book, Rule by Secrecy, is that communism was created by those very same people. And that doesn't seem to make any sense. Why would Wall Street capitalists want to create a communist system whose avowed purpose is to destroy capitalism? Well, first off, they profit from the balance of power, okay? We have to arm, so the Russians have to arm. Russians arming, so we have to arm, you know? And it's just that we always heard about the nuclear arms race, the missile race, we were just in this race, and so they're making kajillion dollars loaning money to both sides. Plus, if you control both sides, then you don't have to worry about them coming after you.